Greetings, friends and family, and welcome to the fourth episode of the Creatively Speaking 2020 podcast season. My name is Michelle Mater, host and producer of the Creatively Speaking film series. As many of you may know, we have been around the independent media space for 25 years and have now transitioned to the virtual space, as has the rest of the world. As the weeks go on, our tolerance may wane, but we somehow manage to keep each other afloat while maintaining a positive outlook on our current status during this pandemic. This week, our episode is entitled Protests and Politics in an Election Year, Part 1. The Creatively Speaking team has chosen this topic because we believe in exercising the right to vote and feel that it is important to encourage our audience to do the same. We also want to remind our audience that most Black and immigrant communities have not always been allowed to exercise that right, and as a result, we all need to stay diligent so that this right is not endangered in any way. As we have said before, it is indeed a time to reflect and examine our history more in depth, but also to act. There is also a need to retain the dynamic, vibrant, cultural distinctions that make us who we are and what this country is supposed to be, a nation where all people of all colors and all walks of life are valued and respected. It is with this in mind that we will hear our first review by Creatively Speaking team member Madison Valdez. Madison is reviewing Pelo Malo, which means bad hair in Spanish. Written and directed by Venezuelan filmmaker Mariana Rodan in 2013, this may seem to be an older title, yet the prevailing theme of this film is still quite relevant today. It is the issue of Latin Americans dealing with the fact of their African heritage. Let's listen to Madison's review.
Hi everyone, my name is Madison, and today I'm going to be talking about the film Pelo Malo, which in English translates to bad hair. First and foremost, I want to clarify that I do not agree or subscribe to the term bad hair, and where this term derives from is in the Caribbean. Folks use it as a way to discriminate against folks who have 4A, 4B, 4C hair, and so on. That is considered, in quotes, bad hair, and anything under 4A, so 3C, 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 3B, 3A, and under is considered good hair. So I just want to clarify so what those terms mean at first. So here, this story is set in Venezuela during when Hugo Chavez is in power. So here we see the young boy who's about 9 years old, Junior, basically grow up. He's growing up in Caracas, and we see some themes in the film are about his identity, being a Black child in his neighborhood with a lighter skinned mother and also a lighter skinned brother, being poor, being queer, and not receiving, you know, the love that a child should receive from their parents. So, meaning his mother, he comes from a single family home. So, to give some context as well, or some themes that we could talk about in the film, we see that he basically goes on this journey to discover what it means to be a Black child, basically on his own, and when he's around his grandmother, which she is a dark-skinned woman. And there in her home, in my opinion, I feel like he felt very welcome, and he felt seen by his grandmother, whereas his mother made him feel ashamed of his identity, his hair especially, and just him, really, any moment he experienced joy, I feel like she just wanted to take that away from him. For example, when he eats at the table and she asks him why he eats so slow, or basically just looks at him very funny when he does anything that's just him being himself. Also, I feel like in this film, when anyone, any person, any non-white person is going through, or especially black folks, when you're going through this journey of discovering who you are and you basically living in a white world, or what that may seem like based on your surroundings, you compare what you look like to what you see. And I feel like when you go on this almost research journey, when he goes to, when he gets on a computer and he sees how to straighten his hair, what creams to put in his hair, that's, I feel like, is one can really identify with those moments, because you're really trying to discover yourself when you don't, and create that world for yourself when you don't see it, especially in his own home where his mother discourages him. So yes, what else can I say? I really think one of the themes also in this film is about him not knowing what affection is, and him having to see what it is to almost like try so hard to be free in himself and love himself when he is missing out on that type of affection, when he can clearly see it that has been given to his lighter skinned brother and not him. Yeah, so I feel like he just didn't experience what true affection was. But he still, towards the end, spoiler, that when, you know, the mother gives him the option of leaving the house or staying, basically the ultimatum was in relation to his hair, so he couldn't stay and keep his hair. He had to cut his hair off, and that relates to also the historical context, because during this time, Hugo Chavez, you know, was his appeal. He was so charismatic to the people because he combined the political and the religion. So in television, you know, people really were attracted to that. So people, since he had, when he got cancer, people started to shave their heads in solidarity with him. So in the end of the film, we see that his hair is shaved, but and when he's in school, he's like in a formation, like a line when they're lining up for school, and his head is shaved based on ultimatum that his mother gave him. But he was not singing the national anthem. So it raises questions about solidarity. And in addition to staying in abusive relationships, basically, because he did have a quote-unquote choice to stay with his mother. But, you know, at that age, you don't really know what to do. In my opinion, I feel like that's very challenging, because you yearn for a mother's love so bad. And I feel like what he holds on to is the hope of that one day coming.
Thanks so much, Madison, for that insightful and provocative review, giving us even more reason to immediately tune into Amazon Prime to find this amazing film. Our next review is presented by the newest member of our team, Johanny Mota, currently completing her MFA in screenwriting and producing at LIU's Brooklyn campus. Johanny is reviewing the documentary Fear of a Black Republican, produced by Kevin J. Williams in 2011. This film places us right smack in the middle of two of the major issues facing voters in the upcoming November election: race and politics. Let's hear Johanny's review now.
Hello, everyone. My name is Johanny Mota. I am a social media manager for Creatively Speaking, and I am so excited to share my review with you today for Fear of Black Republican, which was released in 2011, and it was directed by Kevin J. Williams, a New Jersey native from Trenton. Fear of Black Republican is an independent political documentary which examines the lack of minorities, especially African Americans, in the Republican Party in the United States. The documentary had its official premiere in Washington, D.C. in 2012 and has screened around the United States at theaters, film festivals, colleges, universities, and museums. It was produced over 6 years by the Mary filmmaking team of Kevin and Tamara Williams. The film takes a nonpartisan point of view of the American two-party political system and why the Republican Party has so few black and urban supporters. Many of the film scenes take place in the northeast and southern parts of the United States and primarily covers the time period of 2004 and 2009. The documentary begins in Trenton, New Jersey, with the filmmaker interviewing several African Americans from the community of Trenton, New Jersey, asking why they were Democrats. The filmmaker, Kevin J. Williams, as a Republican himself, wanted to understand why Republicans do not take the black vote seriously or reach out to urban areas like Trenton, which is where he's from. The film was very educational to me, and I learned a great deal from it. Although I already knew about President Lincoln freeing the slaves, I was not fully aware that he was a Republican himself. He was the first Republican president, and for over 40 years, the Republican Party was considered the African American Party. I also learned that the Ku Klux Klan, or the KKK, was created by the Democrats to intimidate black voters and Republicans. And I find this so interesting how roles have changed so much right now. The film also discusses the current disconnect between African Americans and the Republican Party. It interviews several black Republicans, one which was trying to join the Republican committee in New Jersey, but in order to do so, he needed to get 10 signatures of 10 Republicans to vouch for him. The problem was that as a black Republican in the modern age, he didn't know any Republicans. So he had to convince his whole family to turn Republican, which included an aunt who was literally on her deathbed, so she could sign. He had the nurse be a witness so he could join the Republican committee in Jersey. The film also touches on how George W. Bush handled Katrina and interviews several black Republicans who they believe that if he had handled the situation a little better and embraced the families affected by Katrina, it would have changed the dynamics of the events and how black people viewed him. The documentary examines the year 2006, where 4 African Americans ran for office under the Republican tickets, which include Keith Butler, who ran for the U.S. Senate in Michigan, Ken Blackwell, who ran for governor in Ohio, Michael Steele, who ran for senator in Maryland, and Lynn Swan, who, if I remember correctly, ran for senator in Pennsylvania. Kevin Williams also interviews several members of the National Republican Association and their views on the Republican Party and their support of African Americans. Some of the film focuses on Catherine Davis, a black Republican from Georgia who was running for the Congressional District of Georgia. It follows her campaign and how she outreached to several high-ranking Republicans for their support to help her win the election, but they did not give it to her. She was out in traffic waving at her community and trying to connect to her people. She actually told a story that made me very upset because she had arranged a meeting with a Republican governor in Washington. And she went to Washington, and when she got there, the guy forgot about the meeting with her. He didn't even bother to schedule a conference room to meet with her. He asked a janitor to get 2 chairs and place them in the hallway so he could have a meeting with her. She looked like she was about to cry when she was telling the story, and I felt for her. She said that she felt that if she was a white woman, she didn't think that that would have happened to her. And I honestly agree with her. At the end, she didn't win. And this was upsetting because I actually was rooting for her. And I am not even a Republican. But she worked so hard to get that ticket and she wanted to win so bad that I wanted her to win. This was a great documentary. It was very educational, and I learned a great deal about the Republican Party. When you sit down and listen to someone you don't agree with or someone that doesn't look like you, you can learn a great deal, and that's exactly what happened after I watched this documentary. That's also what happened with the filmmaker who directed this film, Kevin J. Williams, who at the end found himself identifying more with the black Republicans than he did with the white Republicans. Thank you so much for listening to my review. Keep listening. You have more amazing films.
Thanks so much, Johanny. What a fantastic review of a most relevant subject. And it is also available on Amazon Prime Video. And our last review of this week's program is the third by Creatively Speaking team member, Kate Pearson. Kate reviews the controversial documentary Suppressed, The Right to Vote by Robert Greenwald. While it's a relatively short film, coming in under 40 minutes, it is upsettingly accurate in its portrayal of the midterm elections in Georgia in 2018, exposing rampant voter suppression. The film is available for free on YouTube, and very important. Let's hear from Kate on how we protect the right to vote.
Hello, I'm Kate Pearson. I'm part of the Creatively Speaking team, and today I'll be reviewing Suppressed, The Fight to Vote, a documentary by Robert Greenwald. In the wake of the Black Lives Matter protests going on today, which highlight the long history of violent murders of black people at the hands of the police, there's a repeated urgency to get out and vote. And while this statement should be true, and it should be the solution, it completely ignores the fact that, much like our racist criminal justice system, our system of voting is also laden with racism. Suppressed, The Fight to Vote by Robert Greenwald, who also did Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, and Making a Killing, Guns, Greed, and the NRA. Just a note, love a director who loves a long title with a colon in it. Great. But anyway, it addresses this very problem of voter suppression. Suppressed follows the 2018 election where Stacey Abrams fought to become Georgia's first black woman governor against Republican incumbent Brian Kemp, and the undeniable voter suppression happening across the state. And the beginning of the documentary shows that there's this correlation between an increased number of voter registration and this excitement around a black woman candidate, and how that effectively made Republican politicians purge voting rolls, take away voting stations, and ultimately create these long lines, confusion, and most votes going uncounted. And of course, these also mainly targeted black voters and happened mostly in predominantly black towns. Suppressed weaves together interviews of voting experts, politicians, ACLU lawyers, and firsthand accounts of Georgia voters. Coming in under 40 minutes, Suppressed is concise in its message and packs a lot in. It's here to educate you. And I know for myself, where my understanding of voting rights ended around the 1960s Voting Rights Act, that there's so much that we all need to learn more. And it didn't end there. Suppression is still, of course, happening. And this at times makes the documentary feel a little like an extended political ad. You know, you have the like overlaid waving American flag and like the grainy text of a haunting statistic, which can start feeling a little too much. But regardless, it's not how they're saying it. It's what is being said, right? And what's interesting is that, you know, no matter how much data the documentary gives to you or facts, what really took me were these firsthand accounts of voters trying everything just to get their vote in, whether it was somebody who was purged from the voting roll or a town that had its polling station taken away, or this woman who had to wait 6 hours to vote, had to change polling stations, miss her job that day, only to find out that her vote was never counted. And this emphasizes that everyday citizens fighting for their right to vote are the ones who are protecting our collective right to vote, right? Like that the most vulnerable people, people who are having their voting rights taken away, are the ones who are protecting everyone's voting rights. And I think, you know, looking at the Black Lives Matter protest, it can't just be Black people fighting for their right to live. It has to be everyone. And the same goes with voting. It can't just be the people, and in this case, you know, mostly Black people who are having their votes being taken away. It has to be everyone, even if you're not affected by it, fighting to keep everyone's voting rights protected. And Suppressed does a really good job at highlighting that. Documentaries about systemic issues, you know, they have a choice at the end of the documentary. Is it going to be a number that you call on the screen? Is it going to be something so shocking all you can do is act? And Suppressed chooses to end on a positive note and chooses to inspire. It's, you know, found footage from 1960s civil rights marches. It's, you know, Florida overturning its law that formerly incarcerated people can't vote. It's pictures from the Women's March. And it ends with a quote, "If your vote didn't matter, they wouldn't be trying to take it away." So at the end, I was left feeling extremely inspired. You can also check out the Suppressed Fight to Vote website, and you can read their action items list. If you want to watch Suppressed, it's free on YouTube, which makes me love this documentary even more. I think that, you know, the more that we can get these documentaries that are have so much important information out for free to everyone, you know, the better. I just finished this New York Times article by Salamisha Tillett called "We Asked for Documentarians, How Does Film Shape the Fight for Racial Justice?" And Ava DuVernay was interviewed, and a quote that she said really stuck out to me, and that's, "A big part of documentary film is that you can actually reimagine the production of history." And Suppressed not only reimagines the production of history, it fills in these wide gaps in our history as well of voter suppression. So if you've been telling people to go out and vote and the only change we'll get is if we go out and vote, tag on to that you have to fight to protect everyone's vote. And right now, Trump is trying to get rid of mail-in voting. Elections are happening in the middle of a pandemic, which means people who are immune compromised, the elderly, it's going to be much harder for them to go out into crowded spaces and vote. So, yes, go out and vote, and fight to protect everyone's vote. I'm Kay Pearson. I'm part of the Creatively Speaking team. Go watch Suppressed.
I'm so proud of our team and how hard they've been working during this pandemic. It just goes to prove that we can adapt and make change when necessary and still maintain our creativity and activism. Thanks so much to Kate, Johanny, and Madison, and to our tech in residence, Isaiah, for your continued efforts to keep Creatively Speaking in the mix. So until next time, this is Michelle Mater, signing off on the fourth Creatively Speaking podcast of 2020. Continue to stay safe and sane. Till next time.